there is some security in being at a big company. And you know that if something doesn't work out, most likely we'll just get put on a different project. Once I said I'm leaving, I was leaving, and if it didn't work out, I was gone. They had somebody replace me in my job, and I was going to be on the market without a job, without a salary, without anything else. And you know, especially not doing that right away or not having any sort of like family wealth or anything like that to fall back on, it was like, okay, I have this comfortable job that pays me pretty well, that does interesting stuff. I'm more excited about this opportunity, but there's still a little trepidation. But what I think I realized was the only way that this thing will be successful because of this user experience issue that I talked about is to go out and have it be a separate entity, to have it be a separate company. And you just have to like make that leap. It's like first time you jump off a diving board or something. It's like it's a lot scarier to jump off a diving board than it is to just go back and stand on the side.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. Mike Kennedy is the former CEO and co-founder of Zelle, the largest digital peer-to-peer network in the United States. Zelle enables individuals to electronically transfer money from their bank account to another registered user's bank account. However, as an accomplished executive and longtime employee of some of the largest companies in the world, it wasn't easy for Mike to take a leap of faith and exit the corporate world and become an entrepreneur. But he did it. And doing so, he created a multi-billion-dollar business. His story is coming up after the break. Selling your business is a miserable task. Months of negotiation, legal fees, and you get to watch new owners trash the business you built. We started Tiny to become the buyer we wish we could have sold to. Fair, fast, and founder-friendly. If you're looking for a new home for your internet business, we'll respond in a day or two. Make an offer in 7 days and close a straightforward deal in about 30 days. Get in touch at tinycapital.com/success. And now on with the show. We're back. I sat down with Mike recently to learn more about Zelle and what it took for him to take that leap from the safety of corporate America to go out on his own. Zelle just recently announced this year they did over $300 billion in transactions. I had to start there and ask Mike if he ever could have imagined he could create something this big.
It makes me feel great. I mean, very proud of it, excited. I mean, the biggest thing is that I feel like it must be something that's beneficial to business in the market. Things that didn't work smoothly, and we sought out to solve for that. And clearly, if there's now over $300 billion going through it in a 12-month period, people are using it and they think it was better than the alternatives of doing it. So that's fantastic. You know, it was what we thought was the case turned out to be the case, which is just great.
Certainly the case, which is incredible. But before I get into I want to get into your story, and you've got a great story, great background, corporate America, starting Zelle. But you're a guy from Omaha, Nebraska, right? And yep. I know you ended up going to Stanford and playing football in Stanford. And I just thought any kid that grows up in Nebraska, no matter what, is going to play football for Nebraska. How did that not happen?
Yeah, no, it was definitely football was the thing in Nebraska. You know, I played sports my whole life, football, baseball, basketball, ran track, et cetera. But football was always my passion. You know, my high school I went to explain how big football was in Nebraska, we started with 215 guys in my freshman year and 190 of them went out for football. Wow. So everyone played football. It was fantastic. We loved it. I think it really helped to make me who I am today in terms of, you know, I'm very competitive, but I'm also very competitive as a team. So, you know, whether it be the football team or whether it be my company that I'm working for or that I'm running, is about winning as a team and figuring out how to put that game plan together and how to make sure that everyone can work together and you can get the best out of everyone so that collectively as a team, you can win. And so I played it in high school and I did well. And, you know, I was looking at how, you know, I wanted to continue playing into college if possible. I also realized that while I was good for high school, the odds of me playing professionally was slim to none. But you know, I wanted to keep playing. So I said, well, what's the best school that I can go to that will help me with my career, which is most likely not going to be football going forward? And you know, when I was fortunate enough to get into Stanford, I thought that, well, Nebraska is a great school. I thought that, you know, Stanford was a school that would help me the most by the time I graduated. And so I went there and got there and I walked onto the football team. And so I was able to both go to what I felt was the best school in the country, as well as being able to play D1 football there, which was a lot of fun.
And certainly a beautiful area as well in Palo Alto. It's like... Yes. Heaven on earth.
Yes, no, it's fantastic. I was talking to my mom last night, who said that last night it was -26 in Omaha.
Oh my God.
Whereas right now it's, I don't know what it is, 65 or so here in Northern California.
That's incredible. Yeah, I always notice, and I always find, or I ask anyone who grew up in California or ended up there and leaves, I never understand why, right? There's just nowhere else could you go, which is interesting. But I want to talk about Zelle, and I want to talk about you, because you were in corporate America for a long time, right? I know at Wells Fargo for quite a bit of time. Give me a little background, but during those times, did you ever have the entrepreneurial bug? What was that like?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I was, as you said, in corporate America. You know, I was at McKinsey Consulting, which is a large consulting firm. I was at Wells Fargo for quite a while. And there's benefits to corporate America. You know, there's good sides to it. There's also downsides to it. And I was fortunate when I was there that most of the things I was working on at Wells Fargo were more of the innovative new things. You know, I was kind of the digital guy, the multi-channel guy, and helping Wells Fargo move from more of a face-to-face situation. You know, I started in the wealth management group, and they, you know, kind of historically have been come and sit across from my nice desk and come into my office and we'll like talk about how to manage your wealth. When, you know, they were realizing, and I was helping them to realize, that most people that have money to manage don't have time to come in across from your nice desk, and they don't want to. They want to like maybe think about it at night when they're at home and shoot you an email, or go online, or they want to pick up the phone and call you between meetings. They don't have the time to come see you. It's not like, you know, some wealthy old person. There's a lot of younger wealth out there. So I helped to develop their first, you know, online and mobile offering for them, and then moved on to running payment strategy and all the emerging payments. So I was able to do some interesting stuff there around merchant funded offers, biometrics, different things like that. So while I was at a big company, I was able to do some more innovative things as opposed to just keeping the lights on with an existing business. So they did a good job of keeping it interesting for me. But then at some point, that itch to be an entrepreneur, it can only be scratched so far within a bigger company, I felt.
Yeah, I think it's, especially the companies you're at, which, I mean, Wells Fargo is the biggest of the big, and McKinsey, and it sounds great like you had those opportunities. But then comes, I guess, 2011, right? And how did it come about, the idea for Zelle? And were you at Wells Fargo at the time when you started to think about it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like I was saying, I was running payment strategy and all the emerging payments at Wells Fargo. And the way that we came up with the idea wasn't, you know, I didn't have some blinding flash of genius or anything. I listened to the customer. We had something called Voice of the Customer, which was basically sending out surveys to thousands of customers and saying, hey, what works well? What doesn't work well? What would you like to see different? And interestingly, there's a lot of companies out there that don't listen to their customers. They just think, I know what I know best. I'm the product manager, so I'm just going to decide the next feature, the next product, the next whatever. We took the customer seriously and we listened to them, and they said, hey, you got great deposit products. You got great loan products. I like your online and mobile. It's pretty good. I can, you know, move money between my accounts. I can pay my PG&E bill, pay my AT&T bill. But if I want to send money to Robert, there's no way to do that. I have to either go to the ATM, get some cash and go give it to him, or I have to like go find this checkbook that nobody wants anything to do with and write him a check and then mail that to him. Or, you know, there's at the time, the only other one really out there was PayPal, but that's like, if one or the other of us doesn't have a PayPal account, you have to actually go open a PayPal account. So then I have to move money from Wells Fargo to PayPal, then move it from my PayPal to your PayPal. But then if you want to take that out to like buy a slice of pizza, you have to now like transfer it back to your bank, which is going to take 2 days. And then you finally get it. And I was like, this is stupid. We should just like allow me to move it from my account to Robert's account. And that made a lot of sense. And at first my thought was, okay, I'm going to do this within Wells Fargo. And that would be a good idea. And we can do that. And I have a technology team, and we looked at it and we can figure out the technology. But then you start thinking about a user experience. And if you're a say, a Bank of America customer, and you get an email that says, hey, Mike just sent you $20. Go to Wells Fargo to collect your money. You know, your first instinct is like, I don't bank at Wells Fargo. I very actively decided to bank at Bank of America. So I'm not going to Wells Fargo to collect this money. It just was this really odd user experience. So, you know, fortunately, I had, because of some of the stuff I was working on, was able to meet with the CEO fairly regularly. And so I said to him, look, we could do this technologically here, but it's not going to work. Here's why it won't work. So what I propose is I'm going to leave the bank and I start a company where I'll basically have a network that sits in the middle, and we'll have Wells Fargo as a customer, and we'll go and get all the other banks as customers. I'll get your Bank of America, I'll get Chase, I'll get the credit union down the street. We'll sign up anyone, everyone that wants to join, and it'll be great for your customers, because when I sign up everybody else, once they're enrolled in the program, the money will just go straight through and it'll end up in their bank account. And this will be so much better than anything else you could think of. And fortunately, you know, we had other smart people. You know, my boss at the time was very supportive of this, of me leaving the bank and doing this. And the CEO said, the first reaction was a little bit of like, so isn't this going to help out our competition as well? And I said, yeah, it will, but you got to think of it as it's going to be a great offering for you. Because right now, they could go to PayPal or go somewhere else and do this. And you don't want to lose your customers to them. So if you just have an offering that's going to be competitive, that makes sense. And so, you know, after some going back and forth, they said, okay, yeah, we'll do this and we'll sign up to be a customer of it. And you should go and, you know, form this company. And so along with some really smart people at the bank, we were able to form the company, and we got Bank of America and JP Morgan Chase on board pretty quickly, always with the goal of getting as many financial institutions on board as we could, got those guys on. Then we signed up Capital One, US Bank, First Bank out of Colorado, you know, federal credit unions, a couple of different ones like that. And we were able to just show that it's the customer would much prefer to go to their bank's app and just say, send money to Robert at Gmail. And Robert gets it into his bank. He doesn't have to go sign up for a new service. It just shows up in his bank account. And you don't have to give your banking information to anybody. It's just, it's already there. The bank knows your banking information because they're the one that actually said, here's your bank account number. So you don't have to tell them. You already know. You're signing in through your bank's online or mobile devices. And so you have great authentication, great security. And it was just this it really worked out, because we felt it was a much better user experience than using a cash or check. And it turned out to be. I mean, everyone has a cell phone. Nobody carries around a checkbook anymore. So that was fantastic. You know, we did start it initially. It was called Clear Exchange. So when we founded it, it was Clear Exchange. It eventually got renamed as Zelle. And, you know, we went through iterations along the way. At first, when we started it, you know, our initial thought was, okay, we need to have a common name. Everyone should call this service Clear Exchange, or we're going to come up with something else. And at first, to be honest, the bank were like, yeah, we'll be your customer, but you guys are this like tiny startup with, you know, a dozen people. We have 10 times that in just our marketing department alone. We know better how to brand things. So each bank wanted to brand it within their own brand families. So you had for a while, Chase called it QuickPay, and Wells Fargo yeah. called it SurePay, and Bank of America called it online transfers. And it worked well. We were still like growing by 200% per year, every year, every single month. 12-month comps was like growing at a couple hundred percent. So it was still going great. And then we said, hey, to just get rid of any customer confusion, we should call it the same thing. Because even though it's working and someone goes, I'm going to send money using SurePay, sometimes they go, hey, does your bank have SurePay? And it's like, no, my bank has QuickPay. And it's like, well, I wonder if it'll work or not. So we got agreement from the banks to all rebrand it to the same thing. And, you know, it continued to take off after that. So it was a lot of fun. It was a great experience. And I'm glad I did it. It was also one of the things I loved the most about it was getting to hire the entire team. You know, we hired people, we helped set the culture. We made sure everyone was successful. We got to try to help get the best out of each person on the team so that collectively we could deliver a fantastic product.
And how was that for you going back? Was there any anxiousness, nervousness about, look, you know, you love the idea, right? Great idea, obviously in hindsight now. But at the time, was there any wavering you had with, you know, going out and doing this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not going to lie. You know, I would love to say that no question in my mind, but there is some security in being at a big company. And you know that if something doesn't work out, most likely we'll just get put on a different project. Once I said I'm leaving, I was leaving. And if it didn't work out, I was gone. They had somebody replace me in my job, and I was going to be on the market without a job, without a salary, without anything else. And, you know, especially not doing that right away or not having any sort of like, you know, family wealth or anything like that to fall back on. It was like, okay, I have this comfortable job that pays me pretty well, that does interesting stuff. I'm more excited about this opportunity, but there's still a little trepidation. But what I think I realized was the only way that this thing will be successful because of this user experience issue that I talked about is to go out and have it be a separate entity, to have it be a separate company. And you just have to like make that leap. It's like first time you jump off a diving board or something. It's like, it's a lot scarier to jump off the diving board than it is to just go back and stand on the side. But you got to do it if you want to really try it out. And I think that the only way you're going to get some of this great products and hyper growth is to like try it new, be an entrepreneur and step out there and just try it, go for it.
Yeah. How hard was it initially? I know you had mentioned you got a few of the major banks on board, but how difficult was it initially coming up, creating the product and then going out? Did Wells Fargo sign on immediately or did you get other bank? Because I would imagine getting those first couple customers to use you or to agree to use you must have been a tough process.
Yeah, I mean, it was. Fortunately, I think there was some very visionary people at first at Wells Fargo. My immediate boss was very visionary. And he said, this is something we should do. CEO at the time was as well. And they said, okay, this makes sense. And I think that we basically had an agreement that they would sign up, assuming I could get at least one other large institution for them to send money back and forth to, because if it was just going to be Wells, why not just do it internally? And so then, you know, they helped me also to talk to some of the other institutions. So we basically got pretty quickly Bank of America and then JP Morgan Chase. But they were hard. You know, those were hard conversations. You know, I think the hardest was the, hey, we could do this internally to our own bank. Why should we do it externally, which would be benefiting our competition, particularly because you're talking about not just a small group, you're talking about trying to sign up every single bank in the country, because that was always our goal. And so they're like, you're going to be helping us out. You're going to help all these banks. So why would we do it? And that was the one that was probably the hardest to get people to understand why you just need to have a better product. And if you don't, there's going to be somebody else like a PayPal, but even better, which turned out around the same time was when Venmo was being formed. So I think that it was smart that the banks listened to us. They saw what the opportunity was for them to have a better product. Otherwise, I think that the Venmos of the world would have probably taken more business away from them over time.
Yeah, that's really true. I didn't even think about that, but I could imagine it was a smart move for them to come on board. But I could totally imagine going and meeting with them and just knowing the pushback of, why aren't we doing this ourselves? Or we should be doing, you know, I just see that as a very difficult ask, but it sounds like you were able to bring a bunch of those folks on board. And at that point, what were the biggest challenges? You started lining up a few major institutions. I guess then you got to deliver, but what were the main challenges you faced at that point after you were able to get a few of these bigger players on board?
I think the biggest challenges is those players are used to having things their way, right? You know, each one individually. So getting everyone to come to consensus, but not having it be worst common denominator, for lack of a better word, you know, rather having it be the best of the ideas. And, you know, I think that we, given their size and their the size of their customer bases, you know, wanted to make sure that we did some handholding along the way. We included them. And the great thing is they all had some really good people on their teams that they put on the project, that they said, okay, these will be your contacts. This is, you know, like we had board members from each of the banks. We had working teams. So we had people from each of those institutions that were like from a product perspective, from a technology perspective, that would be like the sounding board from a, here's what we're thinking about for product. What do you think? And they would weigh in with their ideas. And their ideas were instrumental in what we ended up building. And I think it was smart of us to do that, because if we wanted to take advantage of those large customer bases, we had to make sure that they were going to continue to be happy with the product. And also because these are like great individuals that we could learn a lot from. They've been working in the space for a long time. They're talking directly with their customers. So they could say, hey, what you're saying is a good idea, but if we did this, it might make it 20% better. And so, you know, I got to say, you know, especially early days, what we, the feedback we got, the partnerships we got, the ideas that we all got collectively from not only Clear Exchange, eventually Zelle, but also from those banks, those individuals at those banks on the working teams, et cetera, was instrumental in making the company successful.
More from our guests. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Every entrepreneur needs an outlet. And for years, mine has always been going to the gym before I start my day. I love the morning workout, the shower, and a fresh shave. It allows me to tackle the rest of my day feeling rejuvenated, clean, and ready to focus on the tasks in front of me. However, until recently, I'd mostly leave the gym feeling more stressed than when I got there. The reason? The razors at the gym were horrible. And then when I'd bring my own to shave, I would find they would cut me. Alternatively, I went and bought extremely expensive razors that I would just end up losing. But then I discovered Harry's, and what an awesome find it was. With Harry's razors, I no longer had to choose between quality or a fair price. I got both, and you can too. For a limited time, Harry's is offering their starter set plus a free body wash for just $3 at harrys.com/HSH. Not only are Harry's blades the closest and cleanest shave I've ever had, but also the most affordable. For a limited time, Harry's has an exclusive offer for listeners of my show. New customers can get a Harry's starter set and a free body wash for just $3 at harrys.com/HSH. That's over a $16 value for just $3. You'll get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, a travel cover, and a travel size body wash. It's an incredibly great deal, but act fast while supplies last. Go to harrys.com/HSH to redeem your offer. So remember Harry's, the next time you want your post-workout routine to run as smooth as the shave you will get from Harry's. And we're back. It's only 10 years, and thinking back now, like PayPal, and it was kind of archaic, right? That like you couldn't pay the babysitter now, whatever it was. Like it really has changed so much of transactions and how people do business. And what I love about that is it came from an idea you had, right? And I guess for you, in thinking back to that, what was that like when you first kind of had that aha moment? Was it like, were you like, oh my God, this is exciting? Or was that, or did you, you know, have to, was it more of a slow, okay, this could work? Or did you have an aha moment like, whoa, this thing could be huge?
Yeah, I think that we had an aha moment, but it wasn't the initial moment. Was it it was, here's some different ideas from voice of the customer. We talk them over with my team. We talk them over with my boss, who was, you know, very, as I said, he was very cutting edge. He was, you know, on the forefront of this kind of stuff. So he was as much pushing for it as I was, as much as my team was. And we had other ideas we were working on as well. And so I think that it was kind of going through that maturation process with us for several weeks amongst the team, amongst my boss, et cetera. And we said, you know, this could be good. And then the more we looked at it, we're like, this could be really good. And then we started to have some conversations with the more senior people at Wells, the most senior people at Wells. And it's like, yeah, this could be really, really good. And then we say like, well, let's have some conversation with some of our counterparts at some of these other institutions. And they're like, initially, maybe like, I don't know. But then they quickly are like, you know, that does make sense. And then I think that's when it hit us that it was like, wow, this could be big. But it wasn't like, taking a shower and all of a sudden you get hit by a bolt of lightning. Like, this is going to be the next greatest thing. You know, this is, I just invented the wheel. This was more like, I think it's a good idea. What do you think? And kind of working through it over the course of, you know, weeks, months. And then you're like, whoa, you know, all of a sudden you stop and take stock of what's going on. And you're like, wow, the right people are all thinking this is a good idea. And they're all contributing to it. And they're saying, yeah, we should do this. Let's, why don't you set this up? And why don't we make this happen?
Going from working at major size company like a Wells, how was that for you personally, making that shift to this small group, small team? Personally, were you feeling better? Were you even without, I know I'm sure you're excited about the idea, but like, how was that feeling for you at that time?
Yeah, I mean, it was like I was saying a little bit earlier, it was a combination of, there's a little bit of trepidation because you have the security blanket at a bigger company that if one of your projects doesn't work out, you got other ones. But it was just very exciting. You know, it was like, okay, we're going to make this happen. This is something I've wanted to do for a while, to like run this company, start something out. It was great to be able to like build the team, hire the team, you know, find some office space, build up the culture, figure out how all the pieces fit together, go out there and continue to work closely with these institutions that we're working with to get the best ideas and continue to modify the thing. So before making the jump, it was a little scary, but it was something I wanted to do and something that I thought would be beneficial and would be the way to make the company most successful. And, you know, once I did, it's like, you can't look back. So you just dive in both feet, or whatever the phrase is, jump in with both feet. And it was great.
And now when you look at yourself and consider yourself, would you say you're more of a corporate guy, more of an entrepreneur? Like, how would you label yourself if you had to?
Yeah, I mean, I don't tend to label myself in either way, but if if you're putting me on the spot, I would definitely say more of an entrepreneur, you know, more of a entrepreneur, small company, someone that's, I like the energy, I like the excitement, I like the being able to make decisions with a handful of people, and you come out of the room, you're like, okay, this is what we're going to do. You're going to move forward. At big companies, I think that they've, for very good reasons, set up a lot of processes to make decisions, which can, you know, not to be cliche, but lead to bureaucracy. And having done these companies now that I've been running, I couldn't imagine going back and having the bureaucracy of saying, I know this is a good idea. Robert, you know it's a good idea. Joe, Joan, Sally, they everyone knows it's a good idea, but first we got to take it to this committee. And then when that committee signs off on it, 2 weeks later, we're going to go to that committee. And when that committee signs off on it, a month later, we're going to go to that committee. And then we'll get funding, which will kick in 3 months later. Like, there's reasons they put those in place, but I just couldn't imagine doing it now that I've done the startup thing, now that I've been an entrepreneur, now that I've been in situations where you hire great people that are, you know, ideally even smarter than you, and you work through some stuff and you say, okay, this is what we're going to do. And you move forward and you do it. And that's exciting. And that's something that I would not want to miss out on.
Going back to Zelle, how hard was that? Was it a hard conversation? Was it difficult when you went to all these companies, remember like Chase, QuickPay, and said, look, we need to rebrand this under one name? Was there a pushback?
Yeah. So we initially did it. When we initially launched and went to the banks, we said, hey, we should do this under one name. And they said, we like the idea of doing this together, but we know marketing better than you do. You're no offense, but you're this tiny little company. We have brand families. So everything is, I don't know what it was at Chase. I can't remember if it was everything was Quick something or everything was Pace, you know, something Pay. But it was like, everything has to fit into the brand family. And there's some logic to that. And so there was absolutely pushback at the beginning. You know, for the first several years, they all operated as the same system, same product essentially, but under different names in each one because of this pushback. So there absolutely was push. There's more pushback on having a common name than there was pushback on using the service. Everyone said the service is a great idea, but we're going to brand it. So there was pushback. I think it had to go through a couple of years of saying like, okay, we piloted it in Arizona, then we expanded it to the West Coast, then we expanded it to the whole country. We added in more banks. We saw transaction volumes going through the roof. We had no operational issues. We had no outages. Fortunately, you know, we had no fraud at that stage. And so because of that, then after a number of years of them saying, okay, this is a real deal. This is actually growing very well. This is something that makes a lot of sense. And they were starting to also see from their, not only hear from us, but hear from some customers that there was some confusion over, can I send it to somebody at a different institution that doesn't have a product called what we call it? That's when they really came around and said, okay, you're right. This will be better. But they took a little bit more of like the cautious approach. And I think this is one of those trade-offs, to be honest, of, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of startups say, it's all about disintermediating the incumbents. You know, the incumbents are a bunch of dinosaurs and we are smarter than them and we're more nimble and we're just going to go and we're going to eat their lunch. And there's been some very successful companies that have done that. There's also been a lot of companies that haven't ever gotten scale because it's really hard to go sign up one end user at a time. I think that Facebook, Square, you know, different companies have obviously done a fantastic job of it, but there's been thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of companies that have tried it, and it's really hard. And so instead of us saying it's us versus them and there's an acrimonious relationship, we said, look, we can offer something to you that you need, which is someone that can be more nimble, try new different things, come up with this different thing, be this centralized, non-specific bank branded utility almost that can sit in the middle. And you can't do that internally. And what you can offer to us is this huge customer base for us to get instant scale, because a network is only, the network is value increases exponentially, the number of individuals you add linearly. So if you're the only person in the world with a telephone, your telephone's worthless. If there's one other person in the world with a telephone, hey, it's good. You can call that person, but it's not that valuable. As soon as you have 10 people, it's really good. 100 people, it's great. So we knew our network would only be good the faster we could scale. So we were able to get the benefits of these large institutions and their customer bases. They were able to get the benefit of now having a more innovative, faster to adapt product into their product offering. And so we mutually benefited from it.
Yeah, it sounds like a total win-win. But you know, you said something that there's a lot of entrepreneurs, they just want to disrupt or they want to change the way, you know. And what I love about what you did is it's the opposite. You got these guys all on board and basically you knew, like, you knew to get them all on board and you knew everything that to get them was going to be super important, and you did it, which is the opposite of a lot of folks that certainly go different routes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I admire. And I want to ask you, was there a moment that you basically, you were like, wow, you know, I know you were like, this could be, this could be good. You told me that story, but was there a moment that you were like, this is working? Like, I don't know, a certain amount of money came in or what was, do you remember anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was pretty interesting when, you know, we all thought it was a good idea internally, and we were working with people who, you know, they're just other people you're working with, just another guy, another girl that you're working with, and they're fantastic and they're smart and they're, you know, whatever. And then when we actually announced what we were doing and it ended up on the first front page of the Wall Street Journal, it was a little bit like, oh, wow, I guess this is a big deal, what we're doing here. So that was probably one moment where it was like, okay, I guess this is bigger than just, you know, some smart people from different organizations getting together and saying, how can we benefit the industry overall? This is like a big deal. So that was definitely a moment.
Yeah. Tell me, what are you doing now that you sold Zelle? How is that transition for you personally, and what are you up to?
Yeah, so I'm doing something that's akin to Zelle, slightly different. So still in the payment space. And I'm basically looking at, you know, we've looked at international payments. And international payments is something that is a humongous market. It's a great market, but it's very inefficient. It takes multiple days. It's expensive, particularly when you look at some underserved markets. Even if just one side of the transaction is in one of these third world markets like Africa, Latin America, Southeast Asia, et cetera, it could be very expensive. And especially when you look at remittance workers, for example, or migrant workers, for example, they're leaving their family, they're going overseas, they're working really hard, they're not getting paid a lot. Then they send their money back home, and sometimes like 10% of it will be taken in fees. And so there's obviously pain points there. And that's how I feel like people, when they think about starting a business, you should look for pain points, look for something that you can provide a better solution to. Because if you can't, no one's going to use your product. If you have a better solution, they'll use it. So we said, okay, international payments, that's clearly something that has a problem. It's close enough to payments that I did before that I feel like I could really address it. It's different enough to keep it interesting and exciting and something new. And so we said, okay, how can we solve international payments? And, you know, looked around and said, hey, we could do something very similar to Zelle, which is instead of creating an app that everyone in the world has to sign up for, let's do something like Zelle where we create a network that sits in the middle and we go sign up banks across the world. We sign up licensed money transmitters around the world and get them to use our network. Our network sits in the middle. They all use it and they expose their customers to it. So the same idea of like not disrupting and getting rid of the incumbents, but rather working with them to help them deliver better products, whereas we sit in the middle with this new network. And then we said, okay, what's the best technology to do this with? And the nice thing is there's been a lot of progress in the last 10 years, and blockchain technology is phenomenal, especially for this type of a thing. You can have basically atomic swaps that are basically instantaneous. So you don't have the time lag. It's much cheaper. Banks are using still, I don't even know what it is, 50-year-old technology with, you know, Swift, correspondent banking, goes through multiple hops, you know, to get it from here to Indonesia, it might go from here to a bank in London, to a bank in Hong Kong, to then finally a bank in Indonesia. But we can sign up a bank here and sign up a bank in Indonesia, and they can use the blockchain to instantly transmit that value overseas. And so we said, okay, this is great. We see a problem, we see a solution. And so we really think, you know, the company's called Interstellar. And we're working with companies around the world. Some of our main partners, we're working with Lightnet and Velo over in Southeast Asia, who have been fantastic. We're working with Tempo in Europe, working with Cowry in Africa and Nigeria, working with others. And, you know, we've decided that the best blockchain by far to put this on is a Stellar blockchain. So Stellar was custom built for international payments. And so we're utilizing the Stellar blockchain to have the Stellar blockchain and some of the stuff that we're putting on top of it through Interstellar on the top of it, and then working with these institutions to try to move money efficiently, faster, cheaper, et cetera, cross border.
I love just how you said, like, I know a lot of people, especially who work in this country, in the United States, send money back to family. And when you can say, taking those fees of hard-earned dollars that are going to their loved ones, it's just such an incredible thing to be able to offer where that might not happen. Are you having as much fun as you were having at Zelle right now with the new business?
Yeah, I am. I am. It's great. It's I think that in some ways it's more fun. In some ways, maybe Zelle was more fun. I don't know. You know, it's like the first time you do something is like crazy in a great crazy way. It's also crazy, you know, like you're doing things that on hindsight you're like, why did we do that? Whereas now you kind of have learned from that to an extent. So still great. And you don't do some of the things that you know where it's like, why would you possibly have done that? So you've learned from what you did the last time, building up the team, forming the relationships. It's been great. It's been great. And I also just love like learning. I love the new technologies that we're using with the blockchain, seeing areas where I think the blockchain has tremendous potential, like cross-border payments, other things that, you know, think people or other project people are doing the blockchain. It's just great to learn from. But yeah, I'm having a ton of fun. And I think that it's also was, I didn't have that period of time where there was this trepidation or hesitation of leaving a big company where I had the security blanket, because I haven't been at one for, you know, a long time now. So it was like, okay, I did it. And I always thought I could do it. I thought I could make it work, but you never know until you do it. And so we did build something great. And so now I'm like, okay, I could build something great again. You know, maybe I'll hire some of the same people that I worked with back then. Maybe I'll get a bunch of new people. We'll form a great company. We'll have a lot of fun doing it. And we'll hopefully build something great that's going to, you know, benefit people around the world.
I am sure you will. And before I let you go, I want to ask you, for those people that are sitting, a lot of our listeners are at big companies, big corporations. What advice would you give them if they have an idea and they're holding back?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the advice I would have is, first of all, make sure it's an idea that is going to have a reason that someone would use your idea. So if your idea needs to be better than the alternatives, and if it's not, then probably kind of come up with a different idea. But if you do have an idea that's better than the alternative, so that whether it's businesses or consumers will actually use it, then I say go for it. I mean, it's fun. It's a great time. It's a lot of fun. You can work with some fantastic people. You can make decisions. You can make things happen. You can tangibly see the benefits of your hard work and your ideas and your colleagues' ideas on bettering things for people. So I would say, first of all, make sure it's actually something that will be beneficial as opposed to doing it just for the sake of doing it. But then second of all, once you're convinced it is, I say go for it.
I love it. Mike, thanks so much for joining us today on How Success Happens. This was a great interview, inspirational. Congrats on all your success and thanks for coming on.
Well, Robert, thank you so much for having me. It was a great conversation.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you'd like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's R-O-B-E-R-T, T-U-C-H-M-A-N, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.